This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 33, Quickfire Coaching. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we go through 5 or 6 different topics in no time at all with our quickfire tips. So it doesn't matter what you want to improve, there's something for you this week. But we also go in depth. We talk about SAQ for fast bowlers, and we help a player who can't face the short ball help to pick it up a lot earlier. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. If you want to play better cricket, if you want to coach better cricket, you're in exactly the right place. We've got half an hour of cricket goodness from beginning to end. My name is David Hinchliffe. I'm in charge of things here. And helping me run the show are a couple of great coaches. First of all, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
How are we all? Are you okay?
Yes, the hat is on the side of my head, as they say.
Oh, excellent. Nice. Nice place to have it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you've got to have a jaunty angle, haven't you? And what have you been up to this week, Garras?
Again, just more planning, really. I've been in school most of the week. We've got the kids coming back in on Sunday. And a few of them are going to start early because they've got trials or they've got the ECB talent test coming up. So they're going to start straight away. And others, we're just getting them all sorted and settled so we can make the most out of the winter.
Yeah, I guess start time is an interesting point, isn't it? When do you get back into it and what do you start doing? And that's a question that varies for different people, doesn't it? So it's an interesting area, really.
It is, and obviously people have had different summers, haven't they? You know, we've got a couple of guys that have had quite long-term injuries that didn't play a great deal. So obviously they're going to be fairly well rested from the fatigue of playing a lot. So we'll get them going quickly. And others have had the complete opposite. They've played, you know, seems like day after day after day. So it's important to get that rest before you then attack a winter. Otherwise, you get round to sort of February time and it feels like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, exactly. You see burnout at the highest level, don't you? And the reason behind that is because there isn't a natural break so much for a lot of players, and they do get to a point where they just had enough of it. I mean, no matter how much you love doing something, if you do it every single day, it starts to become a bit of a grind, doesn't it?
Well, it can do, and you know, a lot of those guys that have suffered from those things that we read about in the papers and have seen on the television have been fellas that have probably been 12 months a year since they were about 12 years old. And it does catch up with you at some point. And I think the better we get at programming at the younger age, the less the instance of burnout, for want of a better term, will be at the top end.
Also joining me is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Very good. And what have you been up to in this last week since we spoke?
Similar to Garra's, actually, doing a bit of planning for the winter now, which is what's taking up quite a bit of time. And also still battling on with Burridge Cricket Club, who are in a strong position. We're currently lined up for 3 promotions this season and the first 11 to hold their spot in the Premier League, which would be great. So 3 of the 4 sides are in the top 2 at the moment, which means they'll all be promoted as long as things go according to plan.
And in the spirit of having a bit of fun, I was looking through some of the logs this week on Pitch Vision Academy. Of course, we get a lot of people searching for all kinds of advice on the Pitch Vision Academy website. And we get a lot of things come up over and over. So I thought this week perhaps we could do a little bit of a quick fire type round and just come up with some very quick piece of advice on some of the more popular queries that we get on the show. So on the website. So I've been rummaging around our analytics. And I've come up with, 5 different things. And chaps, perhaps you can just give me a very quick, you know, 1, 2, possibly 3 sentence summary of something very, a quick tip that we can give on each of the topics. What do you reckon?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, right. So the first one is fielding drills.
I try to hit the ball into fielding drills. You might set up a funky drill that's got lots of bases, but my biggest tip will be to hit the ball into the drill as much as you possibly can. And the reason for that is that the fielders will get used to the visual cues that come from fielders waiting for the ball and picking up maybe a backswing change or a body movement change. So rather than giving you a fielding drill, I'm going to add some value to your existing fielding drills. And the more that you can actually get somebody to feed the ball to you and then you hit it into there, the better. There was a great one on our site the other day from England. And it's something that I try to do as often as possible. So you can almost double your drill repertoire by hitting in as many of them as you possibly can.
I would say think about whether or not it's a drill where you're looking for repetition or a drill where you're looking to develop concentration. So looking at combining a kind of a block practice or a random practice. So by that, what I mean, there'll be certain drills where we're trying to field as many times and have as much physical involvement as possible in terms of getting hands on the ball all the time. And there'll be other drills where they're a little bit more match specific and you're looking to develop the focus and the ability to maintain concentration. So combining both sides of that as much as possible. So thinking about repetition sometimes in terms of physicality and involvement, and then also lowering the repetition to increase concentration.
Yeah, and I would add on to that as well. A quick thing that you can do is, by all means, work on the technical side. That's very important. But don't forget about the other elements of fielding as well. You know, the decision-making, the anticipation type stuff. And you can build that into drills as well. And if you do that, then you're going to get better fielders who are not just technically good at picking up the ball, throwing it and catching it, but they're also better at anticipating when a batsman's going to try and drop and run or he's going for a big shot, things like that. So that's an important element as well, I think. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Batting techniques, another hugely popular one.
I want you to have a look at your batting stance that you've presently got and you may have been coached to have. And if it's narrow, I want you to have a go at batting with a wider batting stance. And if it's wide, then I want you to go with a narrower batting stance just to feel the difference. And then what you might find is it confirms that your batting stance allows you to move better, for you to make better decisions, for you to be more balanced at ball strike. Or it might actually chuck out the challenge of, could I be doing it slightly different because I seem to be moving quite well, doing the complete opposite of what I've done before. And the only way that we get to find that out is to try it. So I see players go through a myriad of different widths of their batting stance, but generally we either need a narrow one or we need a wide one. The wide one gets our weight into our heels and the narrow one gets our weight into the forefront of the foot. So have a go with the opposite one and see if it works for you. If it doesn't, at least you found out that you're doing the right thing.
I'll go the other way. I will look at the more basics and more traditional style of things rather than looking at random. So I'll just say always try and consider stability and balance at each point of the shot. So whether that is prior to movement, at point of contact, or following a shot, just try and encourage and just try and analyse the creation of a solid base and the maintenance of balance throughout. And that will be relevant through whatever the shot is.
And I've got a basic one as well, which is there's all kinds of different ways that you can play, all kinds of techniques and methods, but you can't go very far wrong with playing straight. So if you're going to work on something, on one thing, then perhaps trying to hit the ball straight is a good place to start. Next one, how to bowl faster. Again, huge, huge one, this. How to bowl faster.
Well, I'm going to get incredibly simplistic here. Running faster.
I will go for to consider synchronization and synchronization of body parts, synchronization of arms, to try and get each limb, each body part peaking in its velocity or its speed at the same time. So when you are looking at a video analysis of a player, just look at the synchronization of movements and see if they're all peaking at the same time. Are things accelerating? Are things decelerating?
Another simple one from me as well. If you want to bowl fast, try and bowl fast. People will tell you not to, but if you want to bowl fast, then if you have the intent there, the rest kind of follows. Next one is quite broad, so we've got a lot of areas to go down. Cricket tactics.
Oh yeah, I love a bit of tactics. I would go with experimenting within outfields, and it's something that I see at test level quite often, but not so much in the club game. And We tend to go with bog standard sort of ring fields and all of that. But I would love to see us go with a couple of men around the bat or a man on the drive, but then also giving yourself some cover out on the boundary for when they look to try and clear that man. And often the three quarters of a way back on the boundary man comes into play. If there's a short leg in and there's a guy at deep mid wicket who's coming three quarters, then that becomes a wicket taking option. So have a look at the test matches. A number of the subcontinent countries do it very well indeed, particularly when the ball spins, and see if you can implement that into your club cricket.
Think about how you communicate to your team your tactics before you perform, during performance, and then how you analyse them after performance. So just think about how that communication amongst the group goes, so that more people are included, more people are involved in tactics and plans, and more people have an idea of where we're heading as a team. So just try and communicate before, during and after.
If you are batting, then you don't necessarily have to either block it or hit a four. Do remember that you can push the ball for ones and twos as well and score at quite a good rate without ever having to hit a boundary. Finally, how to bowl a bouncer.
Well, I always found, and I'm talking from completely my own experience in this, is that the more that I force my bouncer, the less accurate it became, because I tended to push it a little bit. So I would look to keep my bowling action exactly the same as it is for my length. Don't try and speed it up in particular, but just have a commitment to the length that I want to bowl. So obviously I'm going to be releasing the ball later, but I don't want to change my action at all, because the quality of the delivery needs to be exactly the same as the quality of my length delivery. It just needs to pitch in a different place. And I often see people trying to hoof their bouncer into the pitch instead of trusting their action. So trust your action, adjust your length and commit to it.
I'm going to go down the outcome route. So in relation to the recent test between England and India, Jimmy Anderson and a couple of the other guys took a slightly different thought and plan to their bowling of bouncers. And I think, as well as committing to bowling a length, commit to a line and an angle as well. One thing that Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad did very, very well is they bowled their bouncer from wide on the crease, because a lot of the Indians swayed out the way of it as opposed to ducking it, and they ended up following them a lot more. So as well as committing to a length, commit to a line, commit to an angle.
My piece of advice is don't necessarily wonder about whether you can bowl a bouncer or not. If you can get the ball up above the shoulder, that's a bouncer no matter what the pace is. So give it a go no matter how fast you think you bowl, and no matter, because it's pretty hard. Hit a ball that's going above the shoulder or head height. It doesn't matter what pace it is. It's pretty hard to hit that down. So have a go at it would be my advice. And if you genuinely can't do it, do what I do and get out the side on.
I thought you were going to say keep wicket then.
Keep wicket, yeah, that's the other option, yeah.
Do what I do, keep wicket.
Catch him above your head. Well bowled. Okay, nice. That was good. I enjoyed that. And let's do some more quick fire stuff. Let's finish with the yes, no round. Three questions. But we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. So when you're ready, team, we'll head off into the first question. Question one. The number one quality that anyone needs to get better quickly is humility.
Yes.
No.
Second question. If you continually watch yourself doing something well, it has a positive effect.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. Start off slow.
No.
No.
Hit the ground running. And the eagle-eared among you will know that the first couple of those are quotes from people, so perhaps that can be a challenge for you to find out who said those in the first two. Time for the mailbag now. Couple of questions, and we answer those questions. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your own questions in to us by heading over to coach@pitchvision.com and sending an email. And while you do that, you can listen to the answer to these questions. And the first one is from Imran. And it's a broad question, but I'm sure we can hunker down and get some good answers from it. Imran says, how do I design an SAQ program for fast bowlers? So you could probably write several books on that particular question, but let's see if we can do a quick summary.
Okay, so ultimately we're looking at the development of speed or agility. And in a fast bowler, you would imagine that this question from Imran is probably thinking about speed. So it's, again, identifying which limbs and the movements they make that we want to make quicker, and then trying to stress them in different ways to increase the speed they work at. And that may be by repetition with some sort of resistance and then including it and taking it away. It may be via maximal repetition just at high speed without any resistance at all, but only maintaining that until fatigue starts to set in at its first instance. So there are a number of different ways, but basically just looking at identifying the movements that you want to accelerate and then employing them into a simple drill. And obviously, if you go on the website, you can see there are lots of different fitness and strength conditioning and SAQ drills on the website, and any one of them can be very, very useful. But it depends on largely on which element of your body and which element of your movements you're looking to develop.
It can be a bit of a risky area, can't it? Because, you know, it sounds great, speed, agility, quickness. It is great, I think. But there's also slight risks in that there's good ways to cross over between strength and conditioning and bowling faster. And there's not so good ways to cross over. So you've got to be careful as well, haven't you, Gareth?
You do. And I think SAQ is a really good general fitness thing, isn't it, for everybody?
Definitely.
And it's not something that I would say would make up a significant proportion of a fast bowler's training program. I think it's something that can be added in to add some value, which supports the general development of their physicality rather than the specific one. So, you know, we got into it in a big way years ago down at Somerset, and it had a huge effect on the way that the group trained. But then as other techniques came in, particularly around the Olympic lifting and the things that we know, the pushes, the pulls, the squats, the lunges and the core stuff now, that's very much taken over as the bulk work of a fast bowler's physical development. And SAQ can be added on for some general conditioning, really. So particularly around the speed and agility and quickness, footwork-based stuff that comes into play very much around the fielding and the batting elements of the game. So, yeah, I think it can be incorporated in, but it shouldn't be a major part of it, because there are other more beneficial exercises and skill sets in the gym that you can develop.
I think on that, it'd be interesting to know what Imran's intention is with an SAQ program, and it's whether or not Imran's thinking this is going to play a major role in his development, or if he's got a lot of other boxes ticked and he's looking to just add in something else to mix up his sessions and maybe just keep his athletic development going and just try and keep himself interested in his training. So it'd be interesting to know what his intention is with a program based on SAQ.
Yeah, because context is very important, isn't it? I mean, you've got we've mentioned now a couple of times, you've got strength is an important element, because you can't be strong, you can't be fast unless you're strong, and so you need to do that heavy lifting stuff that not necessarily everyone's got access to. If Imran, for example, is a coach and of young players, and none of those players have access to a gym where they can use weights and Olympic lifting and squats and deadlifts and things like that, then an SAQ, if he's got some basic equipment there, then perhaps an SAQ style program will be the best that he can do in that particular situation, because he can't do everything that he needs to do with the resources he's got available. So that you have to bear that in mind as well. We're talking from the ideal, really, aren't we? It might not be ideal, but I think the basics, what we're saying is, if you build up strength, then speed will come from strength. And then you can build in some of the funky stuff that's done with bands and things like that. And that all has a place as well, if you can build it all in nicely. But it's, you know, it's building towards a peak of being able to get the ball out at the maximum velocity, isn't it? And that starts with strength at the bottom. And I guess technique comes at the top. And in between, you've got all the SAQ type stuff. I guess that's the best we can do in a short answer, Imran. If you need more information, then get back in touch with us. Tell us a little bit more about your situation, and perhaps we can dig down and give you a little bit more information than we can at the moment. Next question's from Nirav. I'm a right-handed opening batsman, I find it tough in picking the line and length when facing short balls. Can you please help me to sort out the issue? Also, can you please give me some tips on playing the leg glance and the flick shot? So he's got a few little issues there. What can we say to him?
Well, I think one of the ways that really good players manage to pick up length, and particularly around the short ball, is to pick up visual cues of the bowler. So in your own way, I would suggest you to analyse bowlers as they're coming in, because they do give away telltale signs. And that's why the likes of Ponting and Peterson and those sort of guys seem to latch onto that short ball. Alistair Cook, when he's in great nick, they latch onto the short ball very quickly. It doesn't matter whether it's being bowled at 100 miles an hour or 70. They still have a lot of time. And the fact is that we can't react quickly enough if all we're doing is relying on our ability to pick the ball out of the hand when it gets to extreme paces. So we need a head start, and that head start comes from our anticipation. So I would encourage you to have a go at a couple of things. One, really focusing in hard on the hand and the ball, and seeing if you can pick up any changes in the way that it's being presented, or the arm path or the ball path as the guy goes through his bowling action. Or then to broaden out your awareness and to look around the bowler to see if you can pick out some body changes in the way that he's running up, or the way that he gathers, or the way that he presents his shoulders. All of these things can help you to get a head start. And ultimately, the best players in the world and the ones that are quickest onto the short ball are guys who can anticipate the best. So it sounds to me that you're limiting yourself to purely picking the ball up out of the hand, as opposed to picking up any cues before. So have a go at starting the identification of length process way before the ball is bowled. And I think that will be a great start for you. In terms of the leg glance, I'm going to make an assumption that we're talking about off of the hip here rather than necessarily off of the front foot. So one of the things that generally happens with people that can't play the leg glance is they're trying to leg glance the ball. And that sounds a bit odd, I suppose. But the guys who do it really well are the ones that allow the full face of a bat to get to the ball and allow the angle to do the work for them. And then as the ball hits the bat, they can turn it in the fashion that we associate with, I suppose, some of the great Indian players in the past. But I was watching some footage of Sachin playing in a one-day game yesterday on the television, and Sachin would allow the ball to come all the way onto him, really full face the ball, and allow the angle to do the work and get the ball down to fine leg or either side of fine leg. And he was a fantastic exponent of that. I can very rarely remember him being hit in the thigh pad, because his technique of allowing the ball to do the work for him paid dividends over many years. So I'm going to leave it at that. Keep it as simple as possible. Don't actually try to force the leg glance. Use the angle of the delivery to do the work for you.
Well, really good answer there, to be honest. The other thing I'd say on the leg glance and the flick shot, really, and the area I'd look to focus on is probably just the balance element of it. If someone's looking to improve or doesn't feel like they're as strong as they'd like to be on two leg side shots, there could potentially be a balance issue which is causing their head to fall to the offside of their base and to the offside of the ball, which is potentially causing them to miss it. So I'd just say be aware of your balance. Try and make sure that you are in a stable position when you're making contact. And as Gareth said there, don't try and play it too fine. Try and maintain that full face throughout the shot if you can do, or at least until you're coming into contact.
Do you ever find that players differ in their ability to pick the ball depending on the length? So maybe the fuller ball they find a bit easier to pick than the shorter ball. Is that something that you see?
Yeah, I do see that. And I think a lot of that comes down to how much you've been exposed to it. I grew up on very bouncy pitches where the shorter ball was easier to access for bowlers. So therefore, I experienced a lot more of it, and as a result was able to adjust my game accordingly. So I think that's got a lot to do with it. And many people, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere, tend to get brought up on wickets that are fairly slow and low, and the short ball doesn't come into the equation. So as a result, their exposure to it is limited, and they don't build up the skill sets. Don't get those repetitions that are vital in building that skill set. So I think that's got a, I think circumstance and conditions have a lot to do with that. But equally, when players do get into a professional game, I think the first answer that I gave around trying to find your way of being able to anticipate, you know, the ball at top level of the game travels too quick for us to be able to make decisions and second guess and make a second decision. So the more you can anticipate, the better. And in all sports, particularly the faster moving sports, the sportsmen that anticipate the best generally are the best ones.
And I guess bowling machines are a bit of a controversial area when it comes to this as well, because you're not getting anything from the bowler there, are you, Lavers? So if you've got someone who's having a line of length problem, do you keep them away from the machine?
I think the machine obviously allows you to develop your ability to pick up the ball. And if they're not picking up the ball well, then you can obviously use a machine to do that. However, it's more likely to be something to do with their ability to judge and to assess a bowler's body position and a bowler's release position as they're actually bowling. So, as you were saying there, as you were alluding to, I'd definitely steer more towards the facing the live bowler and actually learning a little bit more about their action. I think that's one of the reasons that the more you face a bowler, the more comfortable you can come. And I don't mean just on a match day, but the more you play against specific bowlers, whether they're on your team or guys you play against regularly for whatever reason, then you understand their action, and even subconsciously you start picking up little elements of their action which give you clues and tips as to whether the ball's going to be full or short or straight or wide or whatever it might be. So just being aware sometimes that you don't have to understand exactly what's telling you that it's full or short. It can be a subconscious cue that's just letting you know that you need to be moving forwards or backwards.
It's often that point of difference, isn't it, between what's normal and then something different, as opposed to actually being able to specifically say, oh, it's because he's done this or he's done that. You know, it's just having that, as Sam says, that sense, oh, that's different, you know, but it all happens intuitively, I suppose, as long as you know how you can access that from a visual perspective. So going back to your thing on bowling machines, I think bowling machines can be fantastic for, as Sam says, you know, picking up the ball. So identifying length, because we can use them in a variety of different ways, which isn't just about shot execution, the ball landing in the same place. So I think it is valuable in that respect. But the more work that I do, particularly with the top end players, is based around bowling at them, throwing at them, and bowling with sidearms at them. And their ability, because even when you're throwing with a sidearm, you know, the difference between your short ball and your fuller ball, there will be visual cues there that give the game away. And the more that they get used to that, the better. Now, they might not be the same visual cues that a bowler will give, but the fact is that they're identifying difference, and that's the crucial element of it.
I think that's the sidearm's a really good example of effectively what's an alien bowling action, isn't it? And the first time someone faces up against a sidearm, they're generally even if they're a quality batter, they're in pieces for a while, and they really struggle to identify line and length and movement and timing and those sort of things. And it's because it's a completely alien action. But obviously after an amount of time, that becomes more naturalised and they start to understand. It's because they've got no previous history or previous understanding of that body movement and that release point. But in time, that builds up and they adapt to it and they learn it. And they, even though they wouldn't be able to tell you what they've learned about it, or it's unlikely they would, their subconscious mind and their has helped them, and it's started to pick out little points that are just giving them clues and tips as to how to move.
And what this all boils down to, really, is we're a long way around saying it and explaining it in a lot of detail, but really it's about facing a lot of balls. the more balls you face, the better you get at picking the line of length of those deliveries.
Yeah, I think if there was the opportunity to face a front-on delivery of a certain bowler in practice, even without batting, just watching your opposite number, your the opening bowler from the opposition just run in and bowl at you, and watching him bowl a full ball and a short ball and a wide ball and a straight ball. And if you could do that for half an hour prior to performance, then that's going to give you some idea of those cues and that are going to tell you whether to move forwards or back.
Do you think that, because that question had two parts really, one was about picking up a short ball and one was about flicking the ball off the hip. Do you think there's any relationship between those two, or do you think it's two separate issues?
Well, I think there has to be a relationship between those two, purely because the question was asked in that way, and there was a linkage to me. And, you know, obviously the short ball in certain environments is going to come up around the hip or just above the hip rather than coming at somebody's head. So that's probably going to be more prevalent within that level of cricket that is being played. So I think there is a link between the two. And it would surprise me if more of a focus on trying to pick up those visual cues beforehand doesn't have a positive effect, particularly when you ally the technique of allowing the ball angle to do the work for you. If you put those two together, then I've got pretty high level of confidence that your ability to hit the ball off your hip is going to increase.
Okay, Nirav, let us know how you get on. Fingers crossed.
It seems like an eternity since David's got up on the soapbox. So we're asking him to get up there. He will be precisely on a minute. He always is, unlike me and Sam. So off you go.
I want to talk about pressure, specifically being able to deal with pressure in a match situation. Because when you're under a lot of pressure, you're trying to chase down a score, or you want to execute your yorker at the death, something like that, you're probably going to feel lots of things, and you're probably going to feel some of those in a negative way. And I guess it's a tip for this week, and the tip is to switch those negative thoughts into something different, so it turns into something which you can use rather than something which is terrifying you. So if you're feeling fear, think to yourself you're anticipating something. If you're feeling worry, turn it into a concern that is completely rational but something you can handle. If you're feeling something like dread, then it's reasonable to be cautious in a situation like that. So whenever you recognize yourself feeling something negative, turn it around into something which you can use in that situation, and you're going to increase your chances of executing your skill to the best of your ability. And that is all we've got time for this week on the show. Half an hour of cricket goodness. All wrapping up. Before we leave, we need to decide on the traditional prize winner of the week. And of course, we had those questions, one from Imran about SAQ and one from Nirav about playing the short ball and flicking it off your hip as well. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Nirav this week. I liked the angle that we went on, angle being an operative word, and using that angle to get the ball down the front leg off your hip. So I'm going to go with that one.
Congratulations, Nirav. You win the prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if anyone else is listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, well, I fancy a bit of that, let's have a free coaching course, let's have my question answered. What would they need to do, Gareth, to get in touch with us and send a question in?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. We also have social media ways of getting in touch with us. Mainly it's Twitter and Facebook. The Twitter is at Pitch Vision Acad. You can find us messing around on there in 140 characters. And if you want to say a little bit more and also have a look at some videos and some other things that we're going on, then have a look at Facebook. Facebook.com/Pitch Vision Academy for that. If you wanted to listen to this show every week, you can do so. You can subscribe to the show in pretty much any podcatching program that you can possibly think of. iTunes is very popular, but there's loads of others. Dogcatcher, Downcast, Overcast, we're in all of them. And if you want to use the RSS feed, you can do so by going to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll get all the information on how to do that. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers,
guys.